Hello, and welcome to the second podcast in a series brought to you by the Play Submissions Helper website and Andrew Black, the playwright. I'm Andrew Black, your series host, and the series sponsor is the wonderful Play Submissions Helper. The podcast series is called The Play's the Thing, and today's topic is where do playwrights get their ideas and how do they start to develop them? A few logistical notes before we get started. Just so you know, this podcast is the second in a series on the key elements of playwriting. And each podcast has a learning aid that goes with it. There's a brief handout that goes with this podcast that's going to make it easier for you to follow along with the content. So if you look on the Play Submissions Helper website, you should find a place where you can download and print out that handout. You don't have to have the handout to enjoy the podcast, but you may find it useful, and it does provide a reference for later if you want to look back on any of the key ideas. The second thing is me, Andrew Black, your learning host. I've been writing plays since 2001. My plays have been produced across the country. I actually live in Indianapolis, Indiana, where I teach playwriting at the Indiana Writers Center. And I have an MFA in playwriting from Ohio University in Athens, Ohio. If you want more information about me and my background and my plays, you can visit my website, www.andrewblackplaywright.com. And last but certainly not least, I want to talk about the series sponsor, the Play Submissions Helper website. Play Submissions Helper, or PSH, is a community of more than 1,700 playwrights, and their goal is to help playwrights realize their dream of getting their plays produced by saving the playwrights hours of time searching for theaters to submit their works to. For just $6.99 a month, Play Submissions Helper provides a compendium of hundreds of theaters that are accepting play submissions. It's a great system for a busy playwright who wants to stay focused on writing and not so much on sending work out. So you can sign up now by going to www.playsubmissionshelper.com. So let's get into today's topic, which is how do playwrights develop their ideas, and even where do they get their ideas from? So just to give you an overview of what I'm going to be talking about in this podcast, the first thing I'm going to look at is where might an idea for a play come from? Where might aspiring playwright look for an idea if he or she doesn't already have one? And under this category, I'm going to address the issue of how playwrights train themselves to look for ideas and the concept of the playwright's journal, which is an excellent tool playwrights can use to keep track of their ideas. And then I'm going to review five general locations that playwrights can look if they're searching for ideas. Once we've talked about that and you as a playwright have an idea, then we're going to move to the topic of developing your idea into a play. And I'm going to introduce an idea called the theme. So when we talk about the theme, we're going to talk about four things. We're going to talk about establishing a premise for your work, identifying a protagonist or the hero of your story, pinning down your central idea, and then identifying your point of view on that idea. And these are all things that will help you shape your concept or your story idea so that when you begin to write, you actually have an idea or have some clear sense of where you are going to go with that work. And then at the end of the podcast, I'm going to provide you with some follow-up assignments, action steps that you can take if you want to put the concepts that I've reviewed in this podcast into practice. So let's get started. Where do playwrights get their ideas? Now, first off, you may already have an idea, and if so, that's great. And hopefully you'll be able to use the ideas in this section to come up with ideas for future plays that you're going to be working on later in your artistic career. I'm betting that if you already have an idea, you probably got that idea from some of the sources that I'm going to be discussing in this podcast. And I'm also betting that the discussion on pitfalls associated with the various idea sources might be useful to you as you're thinking about how to develop that idea. But if you don't have an idea already, this section is going to provide an overview of some of the key places that playwrights get ideas. So one thing that I want to say is that playwrights and artists in general, but playwrights in particular, have to train themselves to look for ideas. It's almost like developing an artistic sixth sense. The author, Jerzy Kosinski, who wrote a book called Being There, which was later turned into a movie with Peter Sellers, once said, "I consider myself an artist not because I write books, but because of the way I live my life." So I had the honor of actually hearing him speak at the Herbst Theater in San Francisco, and I heard him say that myself. And I never forgot it, because I think it says something about the artistic point of view. If you're really a playwright, you're a playwright not just because you write plays, but because you have a point of view on life. You find things interesting that other people don't find interesting. You find meaning in things that other people overlook. So if you are developing that sixth sense that I'm talking about, you're constantly looking around to see where there might be a theatrical idea or an interesting idea or a meaningful idea. The true artist has a point of view on life and is constantly finding things in the world around him or her that are interesting, stimulating, or artistic. And I actually think a good practice for a playwright would be to identify 5 or 6 things every day that he or she could conceivably write a play about. Now, you're not going to write all those plays, but what that practice does is develops your artistic imagination. So the first thing that playwrights have to do to get ideas is to be looking for them. The second thing that a playwright needs is a place to put those ideas when they come along. So I'm going to introduce a topic or a concept called the playwright's journal. Now, I have a playwright's journal that I carry around with me, and I think that the journal is an effective tool for training yourself as an artist and as a playwright to look for and capture ideas. A small notebook that's easily carried around can serve as the place that you record any ideas worth noting. So you might write down an idea for a full-length play. Maybe it's an idea for a scene or for a skit or for a short play or a 10-minute play. Maybe you just hear a line of dialogue or an interestingly turned phrase that you think to yourself, you know, I might like to use that someday to help me develop a character. Or maybe it's just an interesting person that you see and you think they could conceivably be an interesting character in a play you might write someday. So you make a few notes about who they are, how they're dressed, and where you saw them. My suggestion for all playwrights is that you get a journal, carry it around, and use it. So now that we've talked about the artistic point of view and the playwright's journal, let's talk about specific sources. And I'm going to talk about 5 specific sources in this podcast. Now, strictly speaking, they're not unique sources, but they're general categories. And of course, there is going to be some overlap from one category to the next. So the first source of information is your own personal history or your biography, or perhaps even your family history or family biography. People frequently want to write about things that happened to them personally. It may be something like how you survived a divorce, how you dealt with a parent's death, or maybe the story of how you bought your first house and what that meant to you. I'm going to say that well-known plays are frequently the result of artists looking within their own personal history as a source of content for a theatrical work. So Tennessee Williams in The Glass Menagerie is an obvious example where Tennessee Williams took his own personal history and wrote about his own mother and his own sister, and the character of Tom, or the protagonist of The Glass Menagerie, is a very thinly disguised version of Tennessee Williams' own personal life. Neil Simon did a trilogy of biographical plays called Brighton Beach Memoirs, The Biloxi Blues, and Broadway Bound. So there's 3 plays that he wrote that are based on his own personal history. Eugene O'Neill's famous play, Long Day's Journey Into Night, is based on his own personal history. And the information that he revealed about his family in Long Day's Journey Into Night was so intensely personal that he refused to let the play be read until after his death. And there was a legal struggle around how that was all going to unfold. And probably a play could actually be written about the fight that took place over the rights to the play Long Day's Journey Into Night after Eugene O'Neill died. So personal history or your own personal biography is a potential source of information or content for a play you might write. I'm just going to say there are a lot of advantages to writing plays that are based on your own personal memoir or the memoir of family members. For one thing, you don't have to do a lot of research if the story is based on your own biography or a situation you're very familiar with. So that can shortcut through a lot of the time that can be associated with developing content for a new play. People are frequently very passionate about ideas from their own lives. And if you have an idea about your own history or a situation you've been in yourself, that can provide a lot of motivation to finish the story and get to the end. The third thing is that type of writing can actually be very therapeutic because it gives you the opportunity to explore your own relationship to deeply personal topics. I had a playwriting student in a class today who said that writing plays was a lot cheaper than therapy for her. So those are some advantages to writing plays that are based on your own autobiographical ideas. You have to be careful when you select content from your own personal history, however, and there are some pitfalls. One is that real life is actually not always as interesting to other people as it is to us. The things that we experienced are often interesting to us because we experienced them, and it may not be as easy to get other people as interested in your life as you think it is. When you're writing about events that really happened, particularly events that happened to you or to people you know, it can be tempting to want to tell the events exactly the way they went down. Unfortunately, real life events frequently lack dramatic urgency. One of my other favorite writers, John Irving, once said, "There's nothing that ever happened to you in real life that you couldn't improve on if you wrote about it." So being willing to take artistic license with real life events to make them more interesting can be a challenge if, in fact, you want to tell the story exactly the way that it happened. And so this is the related pitfall is the need to tell things exactly the way they happened, particularly if they involve others, may get in the way of actually telling a good story for an audience to appreciate. And then the final pitfall of working with content from your own personal history is that if you're very emotionally close to the content, it can make it hard to be objective about the quality of the work. So it can be really hard to take feedback about it, and particularly if people don't like aspects of it, it can either be hard for them to tell you that they don't like it or that it may not be very good, and it can certainly be hard for you to hear that. So when you're so close to the material, it can be very difficult to actually work with it. So that's one source of ideas, which is your own personal history or your biography. A second source of ideas is current events or historical ideas. News articles and magazine features frequently contain great ideas for stories which can be easily adapted or modified for plays. Little-known historical events, or sometimes even well-known historical events, can contain the seeds for a compelling narrative. And I'm going to say this is one of the sources that I use a lot. I've written very few plays that are actually based on my own personal life. For some reason, I have stayed away from that. But I'll tell you, I read the New Yorker magazine, and almost every other month, there's some personal experience piece or some anecdote in the New Yorker that I think, boy, that would make a good play. And one of my full-length plays, which is called Bitten by a Boom Slang, came about just that way. I saw an article in the New Yorker, and I thought, my gosh, I would like to write a play which, to a certain extent, follows the contours of the event that was being described in the article. Many well-known plays have been inspired by historical ideas. So The Crucible by Arthur Miller is one of my favorite plays in the 20th century American theater canon. It was inspired by the Salem Witch Trials, which was a historical event. Shakespeare did a whole series of plays which are based on English history. There are 10 plays in Shakespeare's portfolio that are called the history plays, which basically cover the history of England, starting with the Hundred Years' War and going through the War of the Roses. I think Richard III is probably the most well-known, but there are 10 altogether. And just one more example, The Great White Hope by Howard Sackler is based on the autobiography of Joe Johnson, who was a heavyweight boxing champion. So there are many well-known plays that are based on historical events. So now there are some advantages to working with plays or ideas that come to you this way. First of all, narratives that are based on true events can potentially find producers more easily if the historical event or the current event value can be leveraged to build an audience. Secondly, truth is often stranger than fiction. And more outrageous and entertaining ideas can often be found in real life situations than any ideas you could ever think up on your own. So you can often get ideas that are really stimulating or fun from real life events. And if left to your own imagination, you'd never be able to come up with anything that outrageous. The third advantage of working with this kind of content is you don't have to dream up a premise. The elements of the story are already there waiting for you. Now, there are some things you have to be aware of when you're working with current events or historical ideas. And one of these is related to the pitfall that's associated with working with your own personal history, your own biography, is that if you're slavishly devoted to the accuracy of the history or the truth of a specific story, it may get in the way of telling creating a compelling narrative for the stage. You have to be careful not to fall into the make the mistake, I guess I could say, of recounting the events exactly the way they happened. Just because they happen that way doesn't mean that's the most interesting way to tell the story. It's also true that plays that are based on true life events could potentially run into legal problems if the people involved recognize themselves or don't agree to have their life events dramatized. Now, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not going to advise you on the legalities of this, but that's always something you have to keep at the back of your mind. I'm also going to tell you, based again on my own experience, that working with historical ideas or ideas that are stimulating that come from remote situations involving other people's lives is they frequently require a lot of research to make them work. So I actually like doing the research and it's very engaging, but it can also be time consuming and you do all the research and you still may not quite get it right. So all that research may not result in an accurate portrayal of an unfamiliar situation, which can be frustrating certainly to the playwright and ultimately unsatisfying for the audience. And I'm also going to just say that narratives based on real life events or history will require a dramatic question or a hook to get the audience engaged. Simply recounting the events one after the other is not enough. No matter how famous the person is or how interesting the events are to you and to people that you share the idea with. So the second place that playwrights can get ideas from is from current events or historical ideas. Now, the third source of content for a new play or an idea for a play is a social problem. So exploring social problems on stage can be a fascinating way to deal with the heart of a matter, particularly if it's a topic that's one that's really interesting to you. So when you look at a play like Raisin in the Sun by Lorraine Hansberry, it was dealing with a social problem that had to do with African-American families moving into white middle-class suburbs in the 1950s. So it was very, very relevant at the time and very much dealing with a social problem. The play Boys in the Band by Mark Crowley, which was the first play to depict the lives of gay men on stage, is, to me, to my way of thinking, is very much a social problem play, where there are seven different characters, each of whom have a different point of view with respect to life in the gay community, and they're all kind of acted out on stage. So The Boys in the Band is another example. And if you want to look more recently, the musical Dear Evan Hansen, which actually just won a Tony Award for Best Musical of the Year in New York, deals with a lot of social problems. The issue of teen suicide and teen bullying are very much featured in the narrative of that story. So one of the advantages of working with social problems as content for a theatrical piece is that relevant social problems, again, can attract producers and audiences because people are really interested in that topic. That kind of play can really be fun to write, and it actually allows the writer to explore the multi-dimensionality of a situation. And then finally, there's a lot of juice in a social problem type of play because there's a lot of energy, there are a lot of different points of view, there's really a lot to work with if you are developing this kind of material. If you are using a social problem as the source of content for your play, however, there are a few things you need to be aware of. One is that if your characters are not three-dimensional, the play may come across as melodrama or even what's sometimes called agitprop, where it has a very strong point of view and appears to be trying to convince the audience of something. While it can be satisfying for true believers, it's typically not very satisfying as theater. So if you're going to deal with social problems, you have to challenge yourself to be willing to look at all of the different sides of the issue and to a certain extent be willing to identify with all those points of view yourself in order to represent them on the stage. Again, the challenge for a social problem play is to find an interesting hook for the play, which keeps it from coming across as being simple-minded. And I'm also going to say that as with historical plays, or plays based on current events that you were not personally involved in, you may need to do some research in order to fully understand the complexity of the social situation that the play takes place in. So let's look at a fourth source of content for your play. So I'm going to call this the unconscious and even your dreams. Your daydreams, your wandering mind, and even your night dreams could potentially provide great sources of ideas for the narrative. And I think this is because you're accessing your own unconscious when you are daydreaming, letting your mind wander, or having a dream at night. And the advantage of letting this kind of content speak to you and getting ideas from this location is that getting into your own unconscious gives you access to a large and frequently untapped source for images, narratives, connections between things, and even solutions to dramatic problems. So there's a lot in there waiting for you if you look for it. And as with using your own personal history or biography as a source of information, there can actually be therapeutic value here for you as an artist if you're willing to explore your own psyche and to see what's in there. The pitfall is that you have to allow yourself some downtime so that the unconscious mind can speak to you. You have to be willing to sit quietly or take a walk or stare off into space so that the unconscious mind has enough time to get your attention and give you an idea. You have to allow yourself time to do a little bit of daydreaming. Now, I'm going to say that I have a meditation practice. I meditate for 20 minutes every morning. And while the purpose of my meditation is not to come up with theatrical ideas, while I'm sitting there, I frequently come up with really good ideas. So my own personal meditation practice provides me with a repository, it provides me with a practice which then gives me access to the subconscious repository of ideas. I'm also going to say that once you get an idea this way, keeping track of it for later use can be a challenge. I mean, if you're walking down the sidewalk and you don't have your playwright's journal with you and you get an idea, how do you keep track of it? So the idea is to have your playwright's journal handy at all times so you can write those ideas down and you don't lose them that way. The last location for playwrights to get ideas for their plays, I'm going to call this the collective unconscious. There are a lot of ideas out there. And there's a book called The Seven Basic Plots by Christopher Booker, which basically says that there are, fundamentally speaking, there are seven stories. And that every narrative or every movie or every short story, if you analyze it, you could put it into the category of one of these seven basic plots. And the reason that these basic plots come up over and over again is because they reflect some compelling ideas about the experience of being alive that people struggle with over their lives, and these ideas then find their way into their personal narratives. So, for instance, just a couple of things. One of the basic plots is overcoming the monster, you know, which King Kong, right? Another basic plot is the quest. Someone goes on a search to find something. Another one of the seven basic plots is rags to riches. So I'm not going to list all the seven plots here. If you want to go on Wikipedia, all seven of the plots are listed there. But what you can actually do is fundamentally take one of the great plots and then figure out how you might use it to tell a story. You could pick the one that's the most interesting to you. And then once you've got the plot, then come up, fill it in with the specific idea out of your own experience or your own imagination that maps to that plot. And I also want to say that borrowing plots from other playwrights, from my perspective, is fair game. So if you take the story of Romeo and Juliet, for instance, which is, of course, is a well-known play by William Shakespeare, in the 20th century, Leonard Bernstein and some other individuals took that basic plot and turned it into West Side Story, right? So, and you could take the idea of mismatched lovers and drop it into a variety of different situations. And I have a friend who wants to tell the story of Romeo and Juliet in an old folks' home, right? Two seniors that their families don't want them to be involved with each other. So you're basically taking a frame story or something, I would say, from the collective unconscious, the story of unrequited love, and then dropping it into circumstances that are going to work for your story. So borrowing from those seven great plots or from another playwright is a different way of getting an idea for a narrative of your own. My first play, which is a play called Porn Yesterday, which I co-wrote in collaboration with my wonderful collaborator, Patricia Milton, which is basically a romantic comedy about somebody who wants to change their life and falls in love with the person who is going to help them make the change. Now, that story of Born Yesterday is a variation on the Pygmalion story, which has been around for a long time. It's inspired by a Greek myth. So if you really want to look for frames, you can look in fairy tales and myths or other great sources, which basically map to those seven great plots. So there are some advantages of taking ideas from the collective unconscious, from the seven basic plots, or even stealing a plot from another playwright. And I'm going to say that you can't copyright a plot. So the Romeo and Juliet, Shakespeare's estate is not going to sue you if you write a play about mismatched lovers. So borrowing ideas from other playwrights, stories, or narratives is actually a great way to get started as a playwright. So if you don't have an idea yet, I think this is where I would go first. Formula plays, the romantic comedy, the murder mystery, or a fairy tale, have rules which can actually make it easier for you to craft a plot because you're following a certain set of conventions that you have to work within, and they actually provide a set of guidelines to you as a writer which make it easier, particularly if you're writing your first play or a play early in your artistic career. If you borrow an idea from somebody else, some of the bugs may have already been worked out of it, which is going to make it easier for you to develop the story. And I'm also going to say that working with a master plot can provide you with psychological distance from your own narrative, which makes it easier for you to work with it objectively. There are a couple of potential pitfalls. One is that if you're making changes to the master story, they probably should be significant enough that people wouldn't go, well, he's just stealing that other story or she's just doing that over again. So while you can borrow the idea, I would encourage you to rethink it significantly enough so that it's actually becomes a different idea. I'm also going to say that changing the elements of a familiar story may futz with the wiring of the story in ways that are only evident after you put a lot of time into it. So in some cases, it may seem like you've simply transposed ideas. Let's say you have a play that's about two men and you decide to make a play about a man and a woman. What happens is that gender dynamics between two men and between men and women are not the same. So that if you thought it was going to work just exactly the same way with an opposite sex couple as it did with the same sex couple, you may not discover until after you wrote the play and shared it with somebody that it doesn't work that way at all. So that's another thing to be aware of as you write. So those are the five places that playwrights can get ideas and some of the associated pitfalls and some of the advantages of working with those various sources of ideas. And I will say that if you've been following along in your handout, which I actually have in front of me right now, this content is on pages 5 and page 6 of your handout, and it's in a table format, which is going to make it easier for you to keep track of the idea source, the advantages of each ideas, and some of the things you have to be careful of when you're working with those ideas. So we're going to move to the second half of the podcast now. How do playwrights actually develop their ideas? So you have an idea, you got it from one of these five sources, or maybe from some combination of the sources. Maybe it's a historical idea that happened in your own family, so it's both a historical idea and then it's part of your biography. Or maybe you dreamed about that idea, so it came to you in a dream, and then you realized that it was actually a historical idea that happened in your family. As I say, there's overlap between these different idea sources. But now you're ready to develop the idea. So let's look at how you might do that. How do playwrights develop their ideas in preparation for writing Act 1, Scene 1. First, let me say that many suggestions for developing ideas will be presented in later podcasts. So I'm going to stay at a high level now. But I do believe that it's a good idea to start looking for the theme of the play immediately, as soon as you have the idea. And the question is, what's the key takeaway for the audience member? What is it that you want them to think or to say or to feel or to know when the play is over? So the first thing to do is to begin to think about your premise. And I believe that an effective play is driven by a simple premise. And it's a statement which basically describes the situation at what can be called the top of the play and provides the listener with a simple understanding of the story. So it's what you would say to somebody when they say, "What is your new play about?" So it can be useful at the beginning of the process to determine how you might answer that question. So I'm going to use, for the purposes of this discussion, an example, which is from a movie. But the reason I do this is because the movie is so familiar to most listeners that you won't have any trouble following the example. So the movie is The Wizard of Oz, the famous MGM musical with Judy Garland as Dorothy. So if I were going to describe the premise of the movie The Wizard of Oz, I might say, a young Kansas farm girl who feels misunderstood by her family is transported to the magical kingdom of Oz by a tornado. Upon her arrival in Oz, she decides that she has to get back home. The story is her adventure as she tries to get back to Kansas. So if you, as a writer, can identify the premise or the simple setup of your play, that's going to actually help you orient yourself to the rest of the writing. So that's one thing. The next step is to identify the protagonist or the hero of your story. I'm going to talk more about protagonists and how they function and what they're like in a future podcast. So we'll be coming back to this later. But a few simple questions that might help you as you clarify whose journey we're going to be following is, who is the character that has the most at stake? And what character is the audience most likely to feel for or to identify with? So in The Wizard of Oz, the protagonist is the Kansas farm girl, Dorothy. So if you were to write a play, let's say you got an idea of a social issue play you want to write, and the social issue is abortion. So the question is, whose point of view might you take? Whose point of view are you going to drop the audience into? Is it going to be an activist, an abortion rights activist? Is it going to be a politician, maybe who's running on a pro-choice platform? Would it be the young single mother who is pregnant again and is trying to decide what to do in her situation? Might it be the father of an unborn child? Is it the unborn child, him or herself? Identifying the protagonist is actually going to help you shape the idea and give you a point of view. Now, I'm also going to say that as you develop the idea, you may decide to change protagonists. That's okay. It's almost like trying on a pair of shoes to find the ones that fit the best. So you've established a simple premise and you have an idea about who your protagonist might be. The next thing to think about is, what about this subject attracts you or speaks to you? And I'm going to call this pinning down the central idea. There are different points of view about this philosophically among playwrights, but I do believe there's merit to thinking through the idea and reflecting on it before you begin to outline, and certainly before you begin to write. So let's say that you have decided you want to write an updated version of Romeo and Juliet about a Muslim and a Jew. So the question is, why? What is it about star-crossed love, or this particular kind of star-crossed love, that's particularly compelling to you? Or let's say you've decided you want to write a play about Benjamin Franklin. What is it about his historical character that speaks to you? So I'm going to go back to The Wizard of Oz. In The Wizard of Oz, the central idea is the search for home, or finding the place where we are safe and where we truly belong. If you spend some time reflecting on the essence of your idea, you'll probably get a better sense of what the core universal value is from your idea that speaks to you, and it will then be easier to identify the theme that holds your play together. Now, I'm going to say letting this soak for a while and reflecting on it can be hard for some playwrights, as it may involve sitting and staring into space with the playwright's journal in one hand and your pen in the other. If you're extroverted, it may involve finding a thought partner you can talk about the idea with for a while and see what you discover about your own idea as you talk. But I'm going to encourage you to find a way to explore the premise or the situation that you're interested in. There is a value, a perspective, a belief, or a notion that you have about life that's been triggered by this idea. And the more likely it is that the core value you uncover might or might not be held by others, the better. While the central idea or value may actually change as you write and rewrite the play, it's helpful to have some idea of what your personal stake is from the outset. So the last step in terms of developing your idea before you begin to write is to make sure you're clear on your own point of view about your idea. Once you have pinned down your theme, it can be useful to identify your point of view on that topic. So if the audience is going to walk out with something to chew on, it's going to be helpful for you to know at the outset what the key idea is that you want to communicate. So in The Wizard of Oz, the key point is there's no place like home. Or, more specifically, if I ever go looking for my heart's desire again, I'll never go looking any further than my own backyard. That is the point of view. Happiness is frequently found where we already are, rather than searching for it at a distance. So if you take your idea, turn it into a premise, a short premise or a short statement, pin down the central idea and identify your point of view on that idea, you are ready to take the next step, which is writing an outline. So that concludes the remarks that I'm going to be making today on where playwrights get their ideas and how they develop them. The last thing that I'm going to do before we wrap up today is I'm going to give you some assignments. So if you want to take the concepts that I've been talking about in this podcast and work with them, there's a few things that you can do. So the first thing is to get a playwright's journal. That's pretty easy. Go to a bookstore or go online and search for the word blank book or journal and get one that speaks to you. And I actually think as a playwright, you have a special relationship to your journal. So if you find one that stimulates you, I think that's all the better. And when you have your journal, I'm going to say over the next week or so, write down 5 to 10 ideas that catch your attention and write them down in your journal. And I would encourage you to scan a variety of different sources. Pick up a magazine that you might not normally read. Watch a documentary on a topic that would seem to be outside your normal interests. See what catches your attention and then write down that idea. You may want to go ahead and Google the 7 basic plots. And then pick one of those and just ruminate on it for a while and see if one of those speaks to you. Then the next step is to take 2 or 3 of those ideas and see if you could identify a simple premise and then determine who might be the protagonist of the situation that you have identified. And you can put all that information in your journal as well. Finally, the third assignment is to take the ideas that you have identified and see if you can determine what the central value is that's in the middle of it all. And then, of course, figure out what your own point of view is on that value or on that concept. What is it that you might want an audience member to reflect on as they exit the theater? So those are your assignments. And I'm going to encourage you to do those on your own. Spend a week or so generating your ideas. And then at the end of it, you'll have two or three ideas that you've developed, and you can pick one, the one that you like the best. And then you'll be ready to come back to podcast number 3, where I'm going to introduce you to 7 key elements of narrative and talk about how you might use them to develop an outline and to further develop your story. So thanks a lot. And I just again want to give another wonderful shout out to our series sponsor, the Play Submissions Helper. They are terrific. And go to PCHS to playsubmissionshelper.com and sign up if you haven't done that already. So thanks for your attention, and I look forward to seeing you in podcast number 3.